God, it's been like 15 minutes. Tanner's never late. Hello? Yeah, where you at? Well, we were supposed to start recording 15 minutes ago. And don't use daylight savings time as an excuse because you're a grown-ass man and should know better by now. Yeah? Uh-huh. Okay, well, okay. Right. All right, opening my email now. Username cuddlebuck287 at angelfire.com. Password Wilt Chamberlain. Okay. Hello? Son of a bitch hung up on me. Okay, he said to check my email and all would be revealed. That's cryptic. Okay, let's see here. New in my inbox from Tanner. Okay. Chris, can't do show today or ever again. It's been a good run, but I've met someone new. Her name is Cinnamon Cher. Straight off the commune and so fuffa fresh and tasty. She also goes by Narnia, but I know you're not a C.S. Lewis fan. Funny how you always hated C.S. Lewis, and now I'm mounting Cinnamon like Prince Caspian boarding the Dawn Treader. P.S. Attached you will find my final news segment. It's probably my worst work yet, but I'm just not that good at this whole legacy thing. Tell my niece and nephew I'm indifferent to their existences. Fondly, Tanner. That fucker flew the coop. Guess I'll be doing this episode solo. Is it a dumb game, or am I just dumb? Dumb. What's dropping?
If you are looking for relevant gaming coverage from experts, you are not getting it on this show.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to one of the lowest key podcasts you are ever going to listen to outside of anything on NPR. This week, Tanner and I were unable to connect via the internet, which is our usual mode of recording, where I Skype him or vice versa, and we capture the sound, mix it all together, bring you a nice show about dumb games. Well, this week, unfortunately, that was made impossible by my internet service provider. So what you get today is a very modular episode where I did my parts of the show and Tanner did his parts of the show, and they will be assembled in post-production, but neither of us will be speaking to the other. So there is no feedback, no oral feedback coming through here. I can't tell if anyone is thinking anything I'm saying is even remotely funny. I'm literally a 32-year-old man talking into a microphone in a very, very vacant room. And so this is where life has taken me. I spoke with Tanner a little bit yesterday, just trying to strategize things. And the weirdest part about this is that his actual words to me were, I swear to God, I don't know what's going on with this guy, but he said, "The last fucking thing I want on this fucking planet is to fucking entertain people I don't give a shit about." And I just thought, God, Tanner and I really have, our paths are diverging, it seems, and we're just two different people. I love the audience. I've always had a good connection with you guys, and I think it flows both ways. And personally, I'm the best host on the show. Most recent polls have shown that. It used to be a dead heat. And then I started pulling away somewhere around 20 minutes into episode one, is what polling indicates. And I'm flattered. I am flattered. But there is good reason to have Tanner sticking around on the episode, which is why he will be doing segment two. And that's because I don't want to read the fucking news about video games. Are you kidding me? You know how much shit I've got on my plate? Jesus Christ. Look, the news is a fun segment. It's a lot of fun. It's sometimes funny, but, you know, sometimes it's just fun to dick around and listen to what kind of bullshit these people are coming up with. You know, what kind of hijinks is the industry going to get into now is what I'm always asking myself. And then it ends up being the same old shit. Ellen Page gets her titties drawn in, you know, a bunch of polygons and things of that nature. And look, it's all in good fun, I suppose, but the reality is that has 0.0 impact on my day. I walk away from the podcast and I've already forgotten what I've said. So I'm trying to make this just as immemorable to you as every other podcast has been for me. This is episode number 8. I am one of your hosts, Chris, and like I said, I am Tannerless this week. But even though Tanner's not here, I feel like I should take over the duties of what we would normally do in the first segment, and that is we discuss the games that we've been playing. I can't speak for Tanner, but my week was spent not playing dumb games, and I guess that runs contrary to what this show is about, and so if you're tuning in to hear what kind of wackadoo dumb games I've been playing, you're not getting that this week. Instead, what you will be getting is what Tanner and I have dubbed Super Dumb Games Detox. And that's where, during the course of the week, we get a little, we get bored to fucking death playing some of the dumbest games that have ever been created. Look, I love seeing a game that was built in 1988 that got such little fanfare, and somehow we're picking it up 20 years later and reporting back to you that, indeed, it still is dumb. You people. But every so often, I got to play a real game. This week, I played a game called Left 4 Dead 2. Many of you own it. Some of you own it and never played it because you are compulsive buyers of video games and you just shelve them like some kind of hoarder stowing away yet another bag of feces in the stairwell by their stove. I had to play something else. I couldn't stomach another game. So I played Left 4 Dead 2. This is one of the few first-person shooter games that I enjoy playing. I don't get into the first-person shooter genre that often. A lot of it has to do with the communities involved, honestly. It has less to do with me worrying about having skill so much as I just really hate the people who play those games. They embody a type of gamer that I don't identify with. You know, when I would play MMOs, that was fun because you meet people from all sorts of walks of life. It's not just, you have hardcore gamers and then you have casual gamers. You have people who are looking to role play. You're looking for people who just want to grind and, you know, have that kind of an experience. And it feels as though in MMOs you can tailor your experience however you want to, and it's easier to escape the people that you don't like than it is in a first-person shooter. In a first-person shooter, you're stuck in a game with maybe, let's say, 8 to 20 people, and it's actually really, for me, it's really stressful. And that's because there is this ominous feeling that I get that I must be performing. I have to be performing at all times. And that's a very frustrating thing to do, to be honest. I would rather be playing a game that lets me go at my own speed, at my own pace. But if you're going in a Call of Duty or any of those types of games, you've got these guys who are in there and they take it very seriously. And I don't take it seriously, and that's a bad combination. Well, with Left 4 Dead 2, you have no opportunity to be a douchebag because everybody is sort of running wild and flailing their arms. Everybody is subject to, it's like it scales play back to a level where even if you're good, you still could get taken down by a zombie horde. So let me backtrack. For those of you who haven't played Left 4 Dead 2, it's a game that it was released back in 2009. Came out on the Xbox 360. It was also released on the PC and on Mac. And I own it for the PC. That's my place of preference to play. I did own the first game for Xbox. Loved it. Played it with Tanner and some of our friends. Although at the time I was living in a situation where it was difficult to be loud. And one thing you need to know about me is that when I play these games, it's just like when I'm fucking, I'm loud and I don't care. I have to scream and go crazy. And especially a game like this where out of nowhere you could be taken down by a boomer or you know, you might startle the witch or whatever it is. It's just, it always felt like this was a game where multiplayer would thrive and where I needed to be yelling the entire time. So if ever we do play together, you can send me your gamer handle for Steam, and I will add you as a friend. I would love to play this game. The more people, the merrier, in this particular first-person shooter's case. In my experience, the game is just hilarious. My friend and I, we played, they have all these custom maps that players have made, and we played this really good map that was based on you escaping from Splash Mountain in Disneyland. So you're walking through the theme park, which was recreated as best as they could. I mean, I haven't been to Disneyland in many, many years, but from what I recall, that's what it would look like after a zombie apocalypse. And there was 5 total levels, an hour and a half of pure hilarity. And it's funny, you know, looking back on that gaming experience, it was in one of the top experiences I've had all year gameplay-wise, because it was just Casey and I were trying out this new map, never before played by either of us. First level, really slow. There was absolutely nothing about it that is memorable to me. Then you get to the second level, though, and you're slowly weaving your way through the rides, and then you realize that, you know, some of the rides, they're not just props. They're not things out in the background that you never get to interact with. You're suddenly going behind the scenes, and they added these little touches, that I thought were really, it just added to the atmosphere. Where, you know, you're going by different dressing rooms. So just interesting things like that. At one point, you're in the haunted mansion, and then you have to, of course, survive your way through that. And having been on that ride and loving that ride to death, I don't care how old you are, the haunted mansion ride is fucking sweet. It was kind of cool to just, like, find yourself suddenly going through that area of the park. And, of course, like in any other Left 4 Dead campaign, again, it was 5 levels. Each one progressively better than the last one, culminating in a mission where you had to siphon out gas from the tanks of various cars and bring it back to power a generator, which would then shoot a beam of light into the sky that would alert a helicopter to come rescue you. And this is where the game, I think, shines, because for all the times that Casey and I died, it's really always that last 5 minutes of gameplay in a campaign that make Left 4 Dead the exciting game that it is. Those last 5 minutes, you start to realize, holy shit, I have survived this long. If I die, that will be the most hilarious thing of all time. If I were to die right now, I will have spent an hour and a half of my life playing a game and then fucking dying. In any other game, that's such a time sink that it might preclude you from ever wanting to play the game again. However, with this game, one of the most hilarious things ever is if you make it to the last mission with your friends, and one of your friends doesn't make it. It's the fucking funniest thing of all time. So in this case, we did both make it out alive, although my friend almost jumped out the other side of the helicopter, which would have been such a major highlight. It actually would have turned this story into something way more funny in my mind, because we make it that far, and the thing that takes him out is, you know, bad control work on his part. But Left 4 Dead 2, check it out. It is an old game, so if you haven't checked it out by now, I don't know where the fuck you've been all these years. But you're missing out. It's truly one of the best gaming experiences you can have. And each time you do play the game, it's, you know that you're in store for some kind of a new gaming experience. It's just worth it. It's totally worth it. So this week, again, didn't play a dumb game. This was a detox week. But let us know what games you've been playing. I actually just picked up, there's a game that's Minecraft-like, but it employs much more realistic character models and setting, and it's called Rust, and I'm excited to play that. I picked it up for cheap. They are restricting the amount of keys that they give out per hour, so that right now they're only doing 10 keys per hour, and it's doing what they call a Dutch auction. So the price starts at $50, and then from there, 60 minutes goes by. At the end of 60 minutes, the game could be at $0. You might actually get the game for free. However, of course, you know, once the game hits a sweet spot, like roughly around $15 is when I've been noticing people buying the game. Sometime in the later evening, though, when kids have access to the parents' credit card, you see dumbasses buying this game. It's in fucking alpha, people. Just to give you a comparison, when Minecraft came out, I bought access to Minecraft for life in the alpha for $5. No one should be spending more than 15, 20 bucks tops on a fucking alpha, because you have no guarantee that this game is ever going to provide any of the shit that they... I wouldn't buy this game on Steam as a full, complete game for $25. So are you fucking kidding me? People buying this game at $40. It's a Dutch auction, man. Let us all... It's silly to me. But if you want to check that out, you can go to www.playrust.com/buy and see where the auction is at. And whenever you see your price point come up, just click the button and it'll take you to the option to pay for it with your PayPal. I've just watched people play it online and it looks exciting. It looks promising. So for me, it was worth it to pick up a copy of the alpha, but I'm not sure how many more keys they will be giving out. So check it out as quickly as you can. And if you do that, again, just like I said before with Left 4 Dead 2, send me over your Steam username and I'd love to play. And you might see me playing this also on the Super Dumb Games web stream or whatever you want to call that shit that we do. That would be at www.twitch.tv/superdumbgames. And hopefully I'll be able to stream that experience for you to watch. So having said all that, I'm going to turn it over to Tanner's segment in the news. But first, enjoy this tune from our very own Emperor X. Thanks, everyone. I'll be back for segment 3.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's your world's hottest game news, solo edition. Because Chris isn't here, we can't just fucking stop the news, people. The news keeps rolling. There are some hot-ass stories. We gotta get to them. First up, what's dropping? These are the top titles hitting your local malls, GameStops, Funko Lands, Babbage's, Electronics Boutiques, Game Rush. I think that about covers it. Anyway, what's releasing this week? Well, what's already released is the big question. November 1st, 2013, the year of our Lord. We mentioned it last week. Wii Fit. There's a new version for your Wii U. This is Wii Fit U. Apparently, they've got a really interesting strategy going here for the Wii Fit. First of all, massive success on the Wii. People love being sold accessories. They also love being told they can exert minimal effort and still get fit. The Wii hits on all of that. And the Wii Fit was huge last console generation. We'll see with the tiny install base of the Wii U if the Wii Fit U is a huge success. It might actually sell some systems. I'm not quite convinced yet that the Wii has the same kind of grip on the market that the Wii did. But the Wii Fit U is out technically. So if you have a Wii U and you have an old Wii balance board, which, God, one of the greatest all-time accessories ever marketed to the gaming public. It's up there with the power glove, the super scope, all of these dumb things that serve so little function are just basically hunks of plastic. There is no better hunk of plastic than the Wii Fit balance board, which is just a tiny raised platform that you put your feet on, and it does little, if anything. So if you have one of those, remove it from under the bed, because you know it's under there. Get a wet rag, run it over that thing, and get all of the dust off of it, and put it down in your living room. Fucking stand on it, because Wii Fit U is going to use that thing, and you get the game for free on the Nintendo eShop, apparently. You just download the game. Then you get out your old-ass balance board. You stand on that shit. The one thing you've got to get extra, they've introduced the Fit Meter, which is basically a pedometer. You got to buy one of those for $19.99, and then the game is free for life, apparently. And the Fit Meter is exactly what you'd expect. It's just counts steps and calories burned and all that kind of crap. And then I guess you sync it up with your Wii Fit U, and you get told the minimal amount of calories you burned. There are games, apparently, with Wii Fit U, and they look so dumb. I love them. There's a hip-hop game, of course, and guess what? Basically everyone in the hip-hop game has a cap on backwards. So we know Nintendo. If there's anyone that knows about hip-hop culture, it's Nintendo. There's a luge game, a scuba game, a climbing game. My favorite game is called Desert Course. I know nothing about it. From what I can tell from the single screenshot I've reviewed in detail, you're in some kind of buffet of desserts, and you're going around and collecting desserts. This is how we lose weight in the 21st century, goddammit. In other Wii U news, Top Sizzlers, y'all. We got our top story. Original Wii outsells Wii U from April through September. What? This is insane. So Nintendo says it sold only 460,000 Wii U systems worldwide from April through September. Meanwhile, the original Wii bested it with 470,000. So Nintendo is in this situation in which they released a brand new Wii and it is being outsold like forever later from launch by its older system. This is mind-blowing. And meanwhile, Nintendo is stopping production of the Wii. It's selling better! This blows my mind. Still, there is some hope, I think, for the Wii U coming up. Basically, is due to the PS4, Xbox One, don't have shit coming out at release. Meanwhile, the Wii U has got what looks to be probably the game of Christmas, or the Christmas or holiday season, which is Super Mario 3D World, which out of any game launching on any system, that's, to me, the premier game. This connects to our second sizzler, PS4 launch title lineup confirmed for North America. So the PS4 is coming out November 19th. Here are the shit pile of titles launching for the PS4. Consider you are getting a PS4. Which one of these games would you be getting? I don't know. So we've got third-party titles. Angry Birds Star Wars. What? No! I'm going to spend $400 on a system for Angry Birds? No! Assassin's Creed 4? It's already out! Call of Duty Ghosts? It's going to be out for all systems. FIFA 14, same thing. Battlefield 4, same thing. Just Dance 2014, I'm not a moron. Injustice Gods Among Us Ultimate Edition, a re-release of a game I don't give a shit about? No. Lego Marvel Superheroes, if I was 8. Madden NFL 25, has that been out for like months? NBA 2K, who cares? And then the indie titles, Contrast Compulsion Games, no clue. Pinball Arcade, love it. Would rather play it on an iPad. And then Sony's throwing Flower out there, apparently. Killzone, who cares? That's one of their exclusives. I truly could not give a shit about Killzone. Knack looks like it would be entertaining if I was to go up to a kiosk for about 15 minutes tops. Rezogun, perhaps the only Sony exclusive worth anything, but this is just a small downloadable title. Sound Shapes has been out for like fucking 2 years. And then Escape Plan and Flow, who knows what those things are. So we make fun out of the Wii U quite a bit on this show, but when you put up that pile of hot garbage up against Super Mario 3D World or whatever the fuck it's called, it's the new Mario, there's no comparison. I would much rather play that Mario game. In other next generation console launch news, this has been a hot ass story, y'all. The world is abuzz as apparently some dude named Mark Rubin, I have no clue who he is, he's standing next to a Call of Duty Ghosts poster. I imagine he's part of the development team. He tweeted this. Hey, been on the road last couple weeks, so haven't had a chance to update, but wanted to confirm that for Xbox One, we're 1080p upscaled from 720p. And we're native 1080p on PS4. So basically, Call of Duty Ghosts, you know, this is the game if you drive a truck, have a shaved head, love Monster Energy drink. This is the game for you. Big news here. Xbox One is not natively displaying that motherfucker in 1080p. They're upscaling that shit. Whereas PS4 is just natively displaying in 1080p. Listen, people, I don't know if this even matters. But it matters in the PR cycle. Because even if we can't perceive this difference, you know, unless you're looking side by side, this kind of shit, I don't know what's going on with Xbox, man. And the reason that Mark Rubin says they're doing this is to get to 60 frames per second. That doesn't bode well for whatever the fuck's going on with that Xbox. But in all reality, who the fuck cares? This is dumb news. The most depressing sizzler of the week comes from Capcom, who has declared, hear ye, hear ye, after 20 years, Street Fighter 2 Capcom Classic, gaming classic, has been displaced as the top-selling Capcom game of all time by, unfortunately, a dumb game, Resident Evil 5, which has sold 6.5 million units versus Street Fighter 2's 6.3 million. Pour one out. A classic fucking awesome game gets unseated by a truly dumb one, Resident Evil 5. I think everyone would agree that in the Resident Evil franchise, you have a few highlights. 5 is not one of those highlights. I tried to play this game co-op with a friend. At some point, we just stopped one night and it was unlike any other game I had stopped playing where we just stopped and I fucking forgot about the game. Like, there was no compulsion to return to it. I didn't know what was happening. There were no highlights, nothing to to make me want to return to the game. It's as if I stopped playing it and the game disappeared from my consciousness. That's how goddamn forgettable it was. Never finished it. Could not care less about it. It is a sad day when Street Fighter 2 is less successful than Resident Evil 5. But man, it's still crazy news that Street Fighter 2, Capcom, in all of Capcom's storied history, Street Fighter 2 is still the top-selling game and only sold 6.3 million total units. That's kind of crazy. I would have thought that it would have been different. Another sad story for you Command & Conquer fans out there. I know you are legion. The free-to-play Command & Conquer reboot has been canned in response to fan feedback. So Electronic Arts has stopped development on the free-to-play Command & Conquer and disbanded its development studio. They just fucking shut the doors, lit everything that was done on fire, and peeled out of the parking lot because apparently this game was turning out to be a disaster. So this story's coming from GamesRadar. I think all of the stories I've been reading so far have been from GamesRadar, so credit to them. Part of being in a creative team, this is a quote, is the understanding that not all of your choices are going to work out. In this case, we shifted the game away from campaign mode and built an economy-based multiplayer experience. Your feedback from the alpha trial is clear. We are not making the game you want to play. That is why, after much difficult deliberation, we have decided to cease production of this version of the game. EA plans to refund any money players have spent in the game over the next 10 days. This, to me, is just hilarious. First of all, it's great that this didn't come out. Although maybe it's not great because it would have been good content for the show. But it's funny to me that you have this whole team excited. We're going to fucking reboot Command & Conquer. People are going to love it. Oh my God, let's sign them up for the alpha trial. And then players are like, this is horrible. And the development studio just has to be like, well, we tried. See ya. And just abandon it. I love that there wasn't even an attempt to be like, maybe we'll incorporate feedback and change it. They were so off the mark that they just have to forget it even existed. Craziness. Love it. And it couldn't happen to a dumber franchise. Command & Conquer, oh my God, I played the hell out of those games in the mid-90s. And they truly were some of the dumbest things. The storyline of this Tiberium thing that the world is fighting over and all the FMV and the ridiculous costumes, it looked like some sort of daytime kids show, and that villain Khan or Kang or whatever the hell is, Kane, with an eye patch and a shaved head. He looked like a professional wrestler or something. Just a wonderfully dumb series. So those are your top sizzlers. We're going to round up your world's hottest game news with Hot Off the Wire. Guess what, everyone? It came in hot off the wire this week that Hot Off the Wire is a fan favorite. Just wanted to put that out there. And I can tell why it's a fan favorite because of stories like this headline. This is coming off so hot off the wire. It's too hot to handle. It's too cold to hold. This headline, "The Great Big Toys R Us Wish Finder is Here," showcasing the season's hottest toys and special services to help make all their wishes come true. What does that mean? As with every PR story, I have to parse it for you because, believe me, the writing of these public relations people is not going to communicate anything to you. So what this story is basically announcing is that for the holiday season, Toys R Us has officially launched its toy catalog for holiday season 2013. If you were a kid and you had a mailbox and were not in rural Appalachia or something, one of the great things in the 80s was, at least in the Midwest, receiving the JCPenney holiday catalog. Holy fuck, when that tome would arrive and you could browse through all of the different toys that were coming out that season. They'd break it down by play sets. It was bliss. Toys R Us is trying to recreate that by releasing their own Toys R Us Wish Finder. Apparently, this is like a combination of a physical toy catalog that apparently comes wrapped, so kids have to unwrap the Wish Finder, and a companion app and website. Listen to what these evil geniuses at Toys R Us are doing. So with the Wishlist app, kids can, like they're getting married and creating a wedding registry, kids are going to go around with this app running wild, covered in fecal matter, naturally, and run around with this app, and you can use the app to then create your wish list by scanning the codes of toys all over the store. And they're also apparently holding events on a few days throughout November where, is the giraffe even a thing anymore? What was Jeffrey the giraffe? Is that, I imagine his ass will show up and kids can, I don't know, stare at him or something. So they're doing that. They're holding the events. They've got the app, got the catalogs, the whole thing. Just, it's just battering parents down, making them feel guilty and pressuring them into spending way too much money. So then come January and February, the kids are eating baked beans out of a can next to like an oil drum in a RoboCop-esque scene with fire spewing out of it. What's interesting too is, you know what? Your expert crack news team at Super Dumb Games has been on top of the Tabio E2 tablet. I think we're probably the leading source for information about this fucking thing. And Toys R Us has been, as probably the only person who regularly reads stuff coming off PR Newswire, they are pushing the hell out of this E2 tablet. And I'm curious to see if this thing gains any ground whatsoever. Believe me, your Super Dub Games news team will be on top of this story, monitoring very closely the success of this E2 thing, because Jesus Christ, Toys R Us, they must have some big money invested in that piece of shit, because it's mentioned here in this story as well. Anyway, holiday season's ramping up. Your news department is going to be ramping up. It's go time. This is the Super Bowl for dumb news. So we're looking forward to the coming weeks. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is your news.
Wow. Okay, well, that was Tanner's last ever news segment. And boy, he wasn't kidding when he said that he didn't really put a lot of work into that. I hope that his new life with Cinnamon Cher sees him realizing all of his dreams, even if those dreams are somehow related to the Chronicles of Narnia. Ugh, that sounds to me like a life not worth living, but I am not Tanner, I am my own person. And I'm here to bring you segment 3. Segment 3 this week is going to have something in common with the last time that one of us wasn't able to make it, which at the time it was me. I was unable to attend the show. And so Tanner did a segment that we call Close Quarters. The idea behind that being one of us spins a yarn and y'all snuggle up to our ankles and you listen to old Uncle Chris tell you a story about what life used to be like back in the day. Kind of like those FDR fireside chats, except for way more poignant, and of course on the topic of video games. This week I wanted to share something that actually doesn't have a lot of humor with it, to be honest, but it's also not meant to depress people either. I kind of want people to listen to this and maybe think back to a time in their life though where video games maybe filled a void that in the moment you didn't realize maybe that you were using video games as that crutch to help you out or to get you out of a bind, but but that's what they were there to do. They were there for you. And so I'm going to go back to a time, let's call it the summer of 1999. So back in the summer of 1999, there was a lot of changes going on. Graduated from high school, a lot of my friends were leaving for college. I found myself often alone and in that limbo between where you don't necessarily give friends calls to hang out because they don't want to hang out to like play like they used to. And that had already happened many summers prior to that, obviously, you know, going into mid-junior high-ish, that's when you stop going outside to play. When you would wake up on Saturday morning and run up to your neighbor friend's house and knock on their door and hope that they were awake. Those days were long past. These were the days of, it was too hot to go outside, so you're sitting in your pajamas, just letting the cold air from the air conditioning just wash over you. While you did that, you played video games. Now, for me, video games, of course, they've been in my life since I was a kid. The thing about that summer that's particularly poignant, I suppose, is the fact that I did spend it in isolation. And in a lot of ways, that might be the first truly hermit-like behavior I expressed as part of my personality. And for those who know me, I have hermit-like tendencies. I will go weeks having just cooped myself up in the house. And I'm fine with it. This doesn't bother me. This isn't something that I find to be a problem. I still maintain a very active social life and one that I'm comfortable with. But there's also this part of me that definitely needs time away. But when I take that time away, I don't just sit and stare into the middle distance. I love to play games. Early on, when I was playing games, it was to fill a void. There was a loneliness that was there. So yeah, early on, I can see that there was something different about the experience. I remember in particular playing this one game for the Dreamcast, and it wasn't a very good game by any stretch. It was a really dumb game. It was set in the future. You're on these futuristic hoverboards, and you're racing, and you get power-ups, And you do spins at the top of hills to try to gain points. And really, actually a very unimpressive game. But I believe it was a launch title with the Dreamcast. And the name escapes me, but honestly, I don't think the name of the game really matters. That summer, I played the fuck out of that game. I spent most of that summer indoors, away from friends, because it was sort of like I knew that they were leaving, but the one thing that was going to be a constant was I was going to still be able to play games. I mean, I knew I was going to talk to my friends. In fact, one of those friends who went away to college was Tanner. But I knew that one day, you know, of course, I would go visit them or they'd be home for Christmas or whatever it was. I was still going to see these people, so it wasn't like I was saying any kind of an honest goodbye to anybody, but it was more like me figuring out how do I adapt to a less than social life. And that's where games came in. They filled that void for me, and it was comforting. And I think that some of those tendencies to want to play alone, and I want to specify too, playing alone doesn't necessarily mean playing while lonely. The two can be separate activities. Some days you're bored, you play games, and that's all it is. But some days you're lonely and you play games, and that's like your surrogate friend is this game. It's interesting the relationship you can develop with a game like that, because you end up having a game where it has all these ups and downs. You can't beat a boss, so you're pissed at it and you hate it and you don't even want to look at it anymore. You don't even want to be friends with it. You don't want to be in the same room as it. And then, you know, 25, 30 minutes later, after you'd thrown the controller and you've sort of cooled off, let off some steam, that's when you kind of go back to it and you apologize as if to say, you know, I'm sorry for having reacted that way. Let's give this level another go. In that way, I guess there are certain games that I developed a bond with that it makes me look back on the games in a much different light than I would look back on other forms of media. I don't really have much to say on the subject that is too poignant, except to ask whether or not anyone else had this feeling. And it didn't even have to be with video games, honestly. I know some people found... it's, you know what it's the equivalent of? Like, our parents or our grandparents' generation just sitting down and playing, you know, a game of solitaire. It's kind of that equivalent where maybe, you know, you're just bored one night and you start laying down cards and see what happens with that. And I think, too, that games in general, of course, come out of that trying to figure out how to occupy your brain. Like, what is play? Play is simply the brain figuring out ways to adapt to the quietude around you so that it doesn't go crazy. So I guess the hard part about this close quarters segment is that I'm not stating any facts you probably don't already know. Yes, games can bring pleasure when you're depressed, and yes, games can take the place of friends in some circumstances. I don't have a patent on these ideas because it's not part of some thesis with major groundbreaking thought involved. But I was just sitting here before hitting record and just remembering that one time back in 1999, I spent a summer trying to determine which direction my life was going to go. And in those gaps between figuring out who I am and what I'm worth, games were the old standby for me. And though I'm admittedly more and more hermit-like with every passing year, thank Christ I have games. Otherwise, my dick would probably fall off from all the masturbation I'd be doing just to kill time. That's going to do it for this episode on that on that note. Music, as always, is graciously provided to us by the incomparable Emperor X. Please, people, visit his website. We have links to it on our page, www.superdumbgames.com. You can catch us streaming live on Twitch TV. We should have a few videos coming out on YouTube this week. One of those videos is Crystal's Ponytail. And I'm telling you, in that three-part series, I beat the fucking game. A first in Super Dumb Games history, so stick around for that. I think you guys will actually enjoy watching the gameplay as well, because you'll see me discover how to actually play the fucking game, like somewhere around part two, I believe, of the videos. Other than that, we will return next week, hopefully as a duo and not in the singular. So thanks a lot, everybody, and have a great week. We'll see you next Monday.
Dumb Games.